This is OMS Voices, an Amos podcast. I'm Bill Klaproth, and with me is Dr. Austin Gall, who is here to discuss what to know about cleft lip and palate. Dr. Gall, welcome.
Hi, Bill. Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, well, we're excited to talk to you about this. So let's start here. What is cleft lip and palate, and how common are these conditions, and how severe can they be?
Sure, Bill. I'm very excited to talk about cleft. There's many, many things I could say, but it's actually pretty complex to describe what a cleft is. And a simple explanation, you could say it's basically a notch, but it could really could be a severe notch or a small notch, because how a face comes together, if you vaguely remember any embryology classes from back in school.
Maybe a little bit.
I mean, I don't know. I've studied it a lot, and it's hard to recall any of that. An embryo, we basically look almost like a caterpillar.
Okay.
Okay. So if you can imagine the face coming together in utero, and it looks kind of like a caterpillar, and there's all these little bumps that have to merge. Okay. So in the center of the face, there's these bumps or processes. And depending on how much trouble they have merging, that correlates to clefting.
Okay.
You can actually get even a facial cleft. But it's most common to have a lip or a palate.
Okay.
So a cleft lip is the most common, and usually that's when there's a severe notch where the middle and the side don't come together.
And that affects the skin and the bone behind it, is that right?
Yeah. So again, depending on the severity, it could be just soft tissue, but usually it's both soft and hard tissues are affected.
Okay. So we here in America, it's not as prevalent as it is in other countries. Is that right?
Yes. And so nobody knows exactly what causes this. We really have, we have a lot of studies out there, but it's all corollary. People basically put out surveys and say, okay, how many out of these 1,000 people, how many people have clefts, you know?
Right.
And in America, we are lucky. We have the nutrients we need. You know, we have folic acid. So in America, it's fairly uncommon.
Okay.
Okay. Across the world, the overall incidence is about one cleft per 700 live births. Live births, though.
That seems higher than I would have expected.
One per 700.
Wow. So my thought is when the baby is born, you see this right away, but is it something that gets diagnosed? How does that work?
Sure. Well, back in the old days.
15 years ago?
Right.
No.
Well, a couple weeks ago.
iPhone
came out. No. A kid was born with a cleft, and I was surprised. Oh, my God. And they whisked the kid off to the corner, and that's not the way it should be, you know?
Right, yeah.
And thankfully, care has improved a lot that it's not a bad thing. It's just part of who we are as humans. And historically, they'd like whisk the kid off to the ICU, and they're like, how is this kid going to survive? And then the parents and the kid don't bond. So to answer your question, it used to be just a big surprise to everybody.
Okay.
Now we have ultrasound.
Right.
And so in countries and places that have access to care, usually around like the 14th-ish week ultrasound, you can pick up a cleft. But again, remember I said cleft can, it depends how severe it is. So some kids, I see this in certain places where it's very minor, where it's just a little notch on the lip, and you can barely tell even when they're out of the mom's, when they're born. So sometimes they don't even pick it up until they're born.
Okay. Yeah. But you can see it. So if you see it ahead of time, in utero, if you will, are you prepared then? Or do you already have a plan in place?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to let this baby be born. We're going to let this child bond with their parents. And then several weeks later, we know how to address this, right?
Well, exactly. Just like any part of child planning. That's thankfully with better medical care that we have, we could do prenatal counseling. For example, if one of my kids, I won't break too much HIPAA, but had a medical condition, right? And so that informed us as parents, okay, well, this is how we can prepare for that. And we can visit with the appropriate personnel. So what I offer a fair bit of prenatal counseling. A parent will be referred to me through the cleft team because they had their 14-week ultrasound. They picked up a cleft.
Right.
And they should know about it because it helps them make informed decisions. It helps them prepare.
So they know. So there's not that surprise.
Exactly.
So they know and they probably are comforted knowing there's a plan in place. So when is the initial surgery then performed generally for these conditions?
Bill, that's a really good question. There's actually tons of data and arguments when to do this. They've even tried to do it in utero.
Okay.
So whatever you're up for.
Yeah.
But generally, and this is based off of historic literature from the 1960s, which I actually follow because who doesn't like the 1960s, right?
Great decade.
But the rule of 10s, which means basically when a kid is about 10 weeks old, okay. weighs 10 pounds. So that's usually when a kid's around 3 months. And the reason is, back in the day, 10-week-old baby, you want the kid to survive the anesthetic.
Right.
So you don't really want to do this when the kid's really small because
right.
of safety. Now, what's interesting is over the years, anesthesia is a lot better than what it used yeah. to be in the 60s, I'd argue.
Right.
There are folks that try to do it early, like I said, in utero. But outcomes long-term, it doesn't really improve the mm-hmm. condition.
Does severity change the timing of it? If it's really severe, do you try to repair it earlier? Because yeah. the child will have problem latching on for feeding. Is that correct?
So one common misconception is me fixing a cleft, and it's not just me. The surgeon's not the only person. It's a team. But fixing the cleft will not make a kid eat.
Okay.
I said it because everybody's like, "What? Hurry up and fix it." So,
right.
Yeah, fixing the cleft is not going to make a kid eat.
Okay, right. Does it hamper the child from latching on?
So,
and
if a kid has a cleft palate,
okay,
because we didn't talk about anatomy as much yet.
Right.
The cleft could be just the lip,
mm-hmm.
But most of the time it's both a lip and a palate.
Okay.
So, if a kid does not have an intact palate,
mm-hmm.
they can't suction.
Okay, right.
So, they actually usually have a lot of challenge breastfeeding.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you can't even fix the palate safely, usually until a patient's at least 8 months old.
How is that child fed then? Is it?
That can be complex.
Okay.
Most of the time, most of the kids that I treat are able to tolerate a special bottle.
Okay.
Where it's basically a one-way valve,
mm-hmm.
and it works. But some kids end up needing additional therapies to help with the nutrition.
I would imagine. So then what happens if a cleft lip / palate is left untreated?
It's a great question. As long as they can tolerate oral intake, they keep growing and live their lives. And I have some adults that I've seen in other countries that have not been repaired yet. My oldest kid that I was able to personally treat was, I think, in his mid-20s. Mm.
Okay.
So the cleft, fixing the cleft doesn't ensure feeding.
Right.
Now, it'll help long term, but
yeah.
to answer your question, if it's not fixed, there's so many issues for
yeah.
the poor kid. Their speech, the
mm-hmm.
kid that I treated, he couldn't talk.
Right.
And
yeah.
that's the main thing is integration into society.
Mm-hmm.
So a cleft lip and palate, it's not just anatomy. I think the biggest mark of success is how a kid owns who he is or
mm-hmm.
she is or they are and how they can feel and integrate into society. So if they don't get it fixed,
right.
they have a lot of psychosocial issues and clearly ear tube problems, functional
yeah.
deficits.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's not just physical.
Yeah.
At that point. So you mentioned a team of healthcare professionals. Who is involved then? Talk about that team
sure,
that's
absolutely.
Involved in repairing and treating a cleft lip and palate. And what is the OMS's role in all of this?
Oh, these are good questions. So the American Cleft Palate Craniofacial Association, which is the accredited group that brings people together with America that help kids with cleft and palate, their accreditation standards for a team caring for a cleft lip and palate is you need a coordinator,
mm-hmm.
obviously. You need a quarterback to get the
yeah,
team
I was gonna
to
say,
get
a
together.
Quarterback, yeah. right, yeah.
Team player. So the coordinator, you need an orthodontist.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
I would say the orthodontist is critical. And we haven't talked about teeth, but well, it depends on what you want to talk to me, okay? Orthodontist. So coordinator, orthodontist. You need a speech therapist. And don't worry, I won't recite 20 members. There's actually only four main members.
Okay.
It's the coordinator, orthodontist, speech, and a surgeon who's competent with cleft care.
Right. Okay.
So
those
that's
are the
it.
Four
those
main
Those are the
people.
Four main, but you need access to a host of people. So for example, on the Yakima team that I'm a big part of, we have a geneticist, we've got a behavioral psychologist. He's excellent to help us with. A lot of kids are overweight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got, of course, dentistry, pediatric dentists. So you should have access to multiple specialties, plastics, ENT, us. And so to answer your question, I know it's a big question you're asking me.
Yeah.
What do we do as OMS?
Yeah.
I think as oral maxillofacial surgeons, we have such a great background with the dental field
mm-hmm.
because as a team, you need to communicate, right? And so as I said, the orthodontist has a very, very big role to help get this kid a bite because function. And so we can communicate very well to the orthodontist and they need that because if you're trying to speak English to somebody that doesn't speak English, you know, you have to talk the same language. We got to talk about how this canine's going to come in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so great to have oral surgery part of these teams. I always tell my residents, get on a cleft team, help out wherever you are.
Yeah. So do you come in, there's the coordinator, do you do the surgery, do you come in next, and then it's orthodontist and then speech therapist?
It depends on the team's capability and mm-hmm. depends on the cleft severity. Mm-hmm. If a kid is born with just what's called like a incomplete cleft lip, what that means is basically there's a notch in the lip.
Yep.
Sometimes, usually it's a little deficit in the bottom part of the muscle,
okay.
but it doesn't go into the nose because yeah. clefting really is not just a cleft lip, it's cleft lip nose.
Okay.
As I said, sometimes a cleft can even be like here.
Okay.
So if it's a small cleft, usually just the surgeon will take care of that when a kid is at least 3 months old, and mm-hmm. that's really for aesthetics, and so right. they can socially integrate. But you can wait on that small cleft.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it's a wide cleft, because we didn't even talk as much on that, if it's
right.
a big cleft,
yeah.
that's, I like those because they're
more challenging.
There's a lot of things we could talk about, but essentially it's better, maybe. There's some folks that argue better on how to define that, but a lot of teams are able to offer pre-surgical orthodontics mm-hmm. as well, basically.
Okay.
So the orthodontist might be the first person.
Right.
that actually does something before you do the cleft. So it depends on the case.
Right. So then what is the outcome after cleft lip and palate surgery generally?
And that's a great question too, because how do you define mm-hmm. outcomes? What's success? And
right.
the way I think about it is what I said before is, how does a kid feel about integration into society? Not, oh, I think that's a perfect lip, or oh, that lip has a big notch. Because that's what we're drawn to as surgeons is mm-hmm. to try to quantify something. And so that's why there's this 3D photography and people are taking measurements and numbers and scales. But how does a kid accept who he is or she is or they are, you know? So to answer your question, there's a lot of teams out there that try to quantify things. For example, there's this thing called the Goslin's yardstick where orthodontists take casts and they measure how perfect is this cleft repair and mm-hmm. the bite and how does that compare to general norms. So there's a lot of measurements out there.
Yeah, I'm sure you're what you want is the most perfectly reformed, rebuilt mouth and look and smile and all of that. So what about parents? I know there is a psychological aspect mm-hmm. to this as well that you talked about. What advice do you give to parents who rightfully may be fearful learning mm-hmm. their child has a cleft lip or cleft palate?
Yeah. No, absolutely. So Bill, I mean, knowledge is power. It can be something unexpected, right? When I had information from mm-hmm. my kid, I was like, oh, okay, that's one more thing we have to deal with. And so it
right.
reaches it. And so your kid, nothing's wrong with them. You know, it's not that bad. There's nothing wrong. It's just, they just have a cleft. And so it's just part of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
So learn about it and dive in. And the more you know about it, you can help them with owning that condition and giving them the best outcome and result that they can.
Absolutely. Well, this has been fascinating. Thank you, Dr. Gall. Anything else you want to add as we talk about cleft lip and cleft palate?
That's a good question, Bill. I would say it's a personal passion of mine. It's just something that I ended up being fascinated with. I think we're all different. And I think it's important for kids and parents with clefting to just really own that. And it's not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we as providers do our best to optimize outcomes, and we need to continue to do that. Things have gotten better over the years because we're finally communicating better with each other. I talked to somebody in Guatemala by WhatsApp because I'm trying to help their local oral surgeon mm-hmm. because we want to make the world a better place. And so it's not a bad thing. It's something that we can overcome in humanity.
And yes, so. Right. And that's important to know, and important for parents to know that this can be repaired and fixed.
Absolutely.
So. For sure. Dr. Gall, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Bill.
It's yeah. fun. Once again, that is Dr. Austin Gall. And for more information in the full podcast library, please visit myoms.org. And if you found this podcast helpful, please share it on your social channels. And don't forget to subscribe. Thanks for listening.